welcome to Red Ice Creations radio program. This is Henrik Palmgren, and you are listening to Internet Talk Radio, recorded from Sweden up in Scandinavia. Our website is redicecreations.com. Highly recommended that you visit frequently and keep up with our news section. We have a growing radio archive on our website. We also have a subscriber section with our extended interviews. Also, we have upcoming soon a new member section with a lot of good stuff, so heads up on that one. You can find much more about all of this on our website, redicecreations.com. We have a return visit today from Michael Sunanda. We had Michael with us back in June. We talked about everything from climate change to permaculture, and today we have a lot to talk about.
It began in the 70s. I became aware of the culture crisis, or actually at that time it was called Future Shock. There was a very big book on it, and Future Shock is how everything is changing from an economic base, and that nature is pretty much out of the picture. And this is in the cities now.
Yeah.
And of course, most people live in the cities, at least in the Western world. And so I started with Buckminster Fuller was inspiring me to change my life, or to help change the community. So I hitchhiked all the way back to Carbondale, 2,000 miles from here, and took a World Game workshop, and then got inspired and came back to Eugene and started working for naturalizing, localizing, and conserving energy. And then we had the first round of the peak oil crisis then, and conservation started. People started becoming conscious of conservation, that we need to save energy. We've been on this use more, bigger, faster, better, speedier, classier, all that ever since World War II. It's just a race to get more stuff. So we started reversing our life. I started bicycling in the 70s, and I've been bicycling ever since.
That's
and
great.
Our groups in Eugene, we started recycling, we started getting bike paths, many little trends. Of course, to us it was very important, but it was mostly ignored, except for the little bit of conservation, and now it's coming back. Is the peak oil, the oil crisis is coming back into people's awareness. But the government now, at the time when I started that, was with Nixon and now Bush. And those are just symbols. They're puppets. They don't really actually do anything. They're just running by, you know, the industry is the one that's really running it.
Mm.
So we're looking to localize everything, and our governments here are pretty rich and corrupt just by money. You know, I mean, they're not doing all kinds of secret war stuff, but they're just owned by whoever wants to pop the biggest money.
Mm.
So we're looking for volunteer work. Our permaculture gathering that we had here was all volunteer. We worked for 6 months to get it going, to organize it. We had 40 workshops of permaculture activities. The ones I organized were beekeeping, geodesic domes,
mm-hmm.
super fertility, the climate crisis, and a few others.
Mm.
And we had them all scheduled out for a weekend. We had a camp out. Everybody who came camped out, although some people were day trippers, so they didn't camp out. But then we had evening programs, lectures, music, plays, campfires, communal meals. It was a very family-friendly, communal kind of event. And we have those every year. If the culture keeps getting more stressful and the price of oil keeps going up, we're going to have more and more and more of those several times a year.
Yeah, I mean, about the peak oil thing there, do you think that will develop into something really, really nasty, as it were? I mean, we have people like Brzezinski and Kissinger talking about we or they should go into Iran to get more oil, basically. I mean, it's so crazy. What do you make of it?
Well, they live only in the future, in the past. They don't live in the present. And so they always think of the future. And so to them, life is the future. Life is now preparing for the future. That's how they live and how they think. And they've trained the city people. I was raised that way. I was raised to live now for the future. And those of us who are living now for the creative life, we're actually creating something here. We're discovering, learning, creating. Well, the peak oil thing is, since they're living for the future and there is an economy, their life is an economy, they live in numbers and designs and power grids and all that kind of thing, they have to do something now to secure. See, this is a control issue. They want to control. So it was secure the future oil thing. Mm-hmm. And we started in the 70s, we started importing oil, where the United States was the biggest oil producer in the world up to the 70s. And then we started importing oil. And so that's why the oil wars actually, they reversed. And we had been having oil wars. Have you seen The History of Oil by Robert Newman? It's a video on the web.
I think I'm confusing it with, what the heck was that called? End of Suburbia, I think. Have you seen that one? Is it similar?
So there's a lot of media that are coming out about this that are exposing the corruption, particularly the corruption of the oil and the war, is in the history of oil goes back to World War I, when the first oil war started. But anyway, so we're the suburbia thing, the end of suburbia, and there's a new one called Escape Suburbia. Mm-hmm. And it's very much like permaculture. It has a lot of natural culture that we're doing in our neighborhoods, and building your own greenhouses and growing your own food and sharing with your neighbors and conserving and doing cooperative actions with the kids, you know, and all kinds of cooperation, because competition has replaced cooperation. So we're actually reversing back. Now, the people who are in the futurism, they would say, well, you just want to be old and retro like, 100 years ago. Mm. Well, life was more peaceful then. So what do you want? Do you want peace, or do you want to be hurry up, speed, hurry, go, rush, rush, get more and more, you know? And if you have enough, if you live simply, then you can have enough. You don't have to keep trying to get more all the time.
Exactly. It's replacing something, that's for sure. It's a need within people when they can't, either it might be a spiritual thing or something more, deep within people. And instead of actually looking at that and exploring that side, people, they fill that hunger, so to speak, with, stuff, I guess. That's the right word.
There is a speedism, a property, adultism, private property. You know, private property goes with secrets and control and fear of people. Because having locks and all the security games is about fear. Mm-hmm. It is about a private property and having secrets and the class system, because we've got more than the lower class, but we're going for the upper class, you know, and all those kind of ambitions and motives and then fear, you know, because the fear is part of that. Mm-hmm. And so in the smaller towns, you have less locks, less security, less insecurity, less fear, because people are more friendly in the smaller towns and the villages. And, it just depends on how rich you are and how rich you want to be. So the reverse, it's reversing, I call it reversology, that we actually are reversing our goals. But if you've been working really hard to succeed and win, then reversing seems like death. Crash. No, I can't get poor. I'll be, dirty. Oh my God, I'd be dirty. I mean, like poverty, dirty. Oh, it's just terrible. Yeah. So those things are psychically what's inside of people. And so there is this thing about what do you need? What do you want? Where did your needs actually come from?
Yeah, I noticed, one thing that you mentioned is about that kind of the empires. And I think you brought that up in I think you bring it up in Econesia. I looked at some of the points that you sent me, and you mentioned this, that how civilization, how it has risen and fallen in the past. I mean, do you think we're at that cusp right now again?
Yeah, and if you study empire, you'll study that this there's two big things that kill empire or reverse it or simplify it or make it crash, and that is, one is war, and the other is ecology, and we're in a crisis of both right now. The war, we're in another war, which is actually, it's been growing ever since World War II. It didn't really stop. The Cold War and the Vietnam War and, you know, all these little wars. And that was the thing about our empire, the US-UK, USSUC empire, is it's been going on ever since World War II. It never stopped. It's just been growing, and it's an economic game.
Mm.
So the British really pioneered all that. So the other thing is, the ecology is what kills empires.
Mm.
And the main, of course, we think of the Roman Empire that fell, you know. This is the only really big empire was the Roman Empire. The Chinese and the Russian empires were just, and still are, gigantic.
Mm.
They're as big as our empire, but it's different. Our empire is more economic and high-tech, and theirs is more land, you know. It's like the Chinese are going very crazy for economy right now. But
yeah, sure.
The way that European empires rose and fell repeatedly ever since the Greek Empire was, they would kill all the forests and they would overfarm, and then they'd start having droughts and famines and die. I mean, you know, and sicknesses and everything.
Mm.
European empires are the the classic grow and expand and crash.
Mm.
By and then we actually go back to the Vikings, which I don't know if you were aware that the Vikings had cleared their forests so badly, this is in Greenland and Iceland and somewhere in Scandinavia, that they started crashing, and so they migrated to England and took over England, and England had cleared their forests, and the mainland in Europe had cleared their forests, so then they started farming. Their farming is so bad that they ruined the soil, and then they ran out of food. And this happened repeatedly, probably a dozen times in different empires in Europe in the last 2,000 years.
Hmm. How about that? Yeah, and
it's explained in a book called Collapse.
Mm-hmm.
How we wipe out our ecology, our soils and forests. And now the fishing, you know, and that's happened with fishing repeatedly.
Yeah, sure, that's right. And let's not even get into the meat production that is, you know, occurring, all that span, all the crops that we grow for the meat production and all the fresh water that goes to that. I mean, do you see that a more sustainable and viable solutions for the future is to phase out meat completely, or at least go down on it, so to speak?
Yeah, the Chinese actually, now minus the Chinese Walmart industry, the Chinese have more permaculture. Permaculture means permanent culture, is growing your own food, simply harvesting energy with the water, the sun, the wind, the rain, and using it as an incoming energy, not as something that we manufacture. China is ruining some of their ecology by their dams and their cities and their industry. They tend to do everything more extreme than we do because they have more people, they have more cooperation. Some would say they have more slavery now with all these factories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so
yeah.
The whole thing about replacing that with, and China is does a lot of permaculture. They have something like 70,000 what we would call counties here. They call communes,
mm-hmm,
where they're cooperating. Well, China has a tradition of this, of cooperation, but they are ruining their ecology by this overproduction thing. So if we just harvest the energy of the wind, the sun, the rain, the water on a daily basis, then we don't need to make huge dams, which ruin the ecology. The dams ruin the ecology. They flood the area. They kill the fish. The sediments fill up. The dams create more problems, and then for electricity, you know, and then they for irrigation. So they ruin their water system by damming, and so and it's just if you study empire and see how they've crashed. China had a really big empire, but it was run by the British 100 years ago.
That's right.
And that was why Chairman Mao did the revolution. Well, Jefferson and Chairman Mao, Thomas Jefferson and Mao and a few others have said, we need to have a revolution every generation. That every generation needs to find its own ways and its own sources and its own innovations and discovery. So we're discovering now that nature supplies us with what we need. And there's some good examples in Europe. There are places in Norway and Finland and Switzerland and less, well, now in actually in France and Europe and England, they have tremendous organic markets and farms. And do you have those in Sweden?
We have a few. I'm not that, you know, very much out there in that kind of field and you know, looking at this in that sense, but I'm sure there are a few. There are actually a few that I've heard of from a few friends now. When I come to think of it, and I think there are a lot of different ones also. Some are just more like, you know, communes that are kind of into the raw food diets and stuff like this, and they even create sustainable, you know, in the ecological sense. So there, I guess there are a few ones out there actually. Yes. So that's good. But one thing that comes to mind, you know, when you talked about that they are futurists, so to speak, they look for the future, towards the future and all that, and what the plan is, you know, for society overall. And you're talking about, in that sense, going backwards. But I mean, the plan of these guys is, if we look at it, I mean, this is about, if we're talking about energy, for example, I mean, they are creating particle accelerators, building supercomputers and HARP-type devices that are going in, you know, up there in Alaska with billions of watts putting in them. And, I mean, so for the sake of energy, you know, conservation, there's nothing like that on the horizon at all. I mean, is this sustainable in the long run? What's going to happen here, do you think?
Well, we've been talking about crash, and it's very possible that they are planning for a crash, and that's why they're going so fast to develop all this stuff to control the world. The HARP thing is to control the weather. They've got lasers and weapons in outer space. It's hard to be positive about the future when we think about high tech. But, well, for me, because I love nature. So in a way, it's a spiritual thing of getting back to nature by loving nature. It isn't like, well, I have to do this now because there's a problem. You know, it's like I'm choosing because it's fun. It's enlivening. I'm still a kid. I'm over 60 years old, and I still feel like a kid because it's nature is inspiring. Nature is our supplier. And all these big tech things that we were talking about, is they really want to control everything, like control the universe. I mean, that's how they think. This is big science.
Yeah.
Big science is a religion. People believe in technology. We do not know the people who make our technology. We never know them.
Yeah.
We always import this stuff through stores that, you know, comes 1,000 miles away.
Mm.
So it's like, what are your sources? What do you want? And do you know how something is made? Do you know where it's from, who made it, how it's made? What are the ingredients? You can't even read the ingredients anymore. I mean, they publish it, but you can't read it. It's micro print, and there's all this science. It's science is a religion. You learn how to think and speak and write in scientese. It's actually a language, scientese. And in every culture, like the Swedish or all the different cultures have, a lot of the same words, which are science words. So it's like, it is certainly a religion. It's a belief. You believe in the experts who you've never met. I was raised in science. I was raised a science nut. I started in sixth grade being a science head and went for about 15 years, and it made me sick and depressed and, you know, rich people who, and it's been known for 5,000 years that the cities are the places where people get sick.
Mm-hmm.
That's the place where these monster hospitals are. Hospitals now that are bigger than small towns.
Yeah, oh, that's incredible. Speaking of towns and cities, one aspect that I've heard a few people talk about this is kind of the grid lines on even where some cities actually are located themselves. But I noticed looking at your website a little bit, you mentioned that kind of in a shortlist menu and talked about the different grid lines that are out there and so forth, the Curry lines, the Hartman lines, and all of that. Is that anything that you go into, like in your new book, or have written about before?
Yeah, that's very important. The whole Earth energy thing is how Earth is organized. Like the fault lines, I was dreaming about that today. The fault lines in the ocean, at the bottom of the oceans, is where the Earth is growing from. And those are the most powerful grid lines on the Earth, where the ocean is growing. The fault lines, the lava is coming out, and it's pushing the oceans apart, and it's expanding Earth. There's a system that of this. Actually, they've been aware of this ever since they've been the Romans built. And I say the Romans because, you know, we're Westerners, and we think of those empires.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been aware of these power lines inside the Earth. In England, they're called ley lines. They mm-hmm. probably have names in all the countries over there for them because they've been building temples and military bases and churches, cathedrals, on these power spots.
Yeah.
The vortexes is the scientific name for it. And the ley lines, there's two kinds of ley lines. There's the energy that flows through the ground, and then there's the lines that you can see, like if you stand on a hill or something, you can see these various standing stones and temples and monoliths and megaliths and the circles, the rock circles. All those are all set up on the magnetic fields of the Earth, and they're where they concentrate the energy. So there's two kinds. Well, actually, there's three kinds. There's the hot places where they're very active and they're like kind of shocking and they give off energy. Then there's magnetic spots, power vortexes, that are very attractive and they concentrate energy and people are attracted to them, like a lake or springs or hollows, canyons, valleys, and so on. People are attracted to these. And then there's the balancing kind. So there's the hot, the radiating, and then there's the cool, which is a magnetic, and then there's the balancing. There's three kinds. So like the magnetic triangles, or well, actually they're just called triangles because you don't really see triangles much, except for pyramids and tetrahedrons. And when I was out on the ground, I would see a lot of tetrahedrons in the rocks, particularly in Hawaii, but in other places you see tetrahedrons in rocks, which are three-sided pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Mr. Fuller started this actually rediscovering the polyhedra, geodesic geometry, tetrahedrons, pyramids, spheres, and all kinds of triangulations. But Da Vinci was the first discoverer of this in the West, and it's been integrated in. It's what nature does. It's crystals. All crystals are based on the triangles and the spheres and tetrahedrons and pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've rediscovered this in the middle, in about the last 50 years, with crystals and all the organic chemistry and metallurgy and stuff that they've been doing. But Bucky discovered this in the 20s and decided to try to. The spirit told him to put it into buildings, make buildings out of it, the geodesic domes. Well, the military started using the domes in the 50s, and the hippies started using them in the 60s. We still use them, but if you look on the web, there's quite a bit on it. There's a website called vortexmaps.com, and it is fantastic. And it shows the Earth map of 62 power points on the Earth. And like, if, for example, there's five of them going around in the northern hemisphere at 19.5 degrees latitude, and it's called there's five of them: the Bermuda Triangle, the Devil's Triangle, in the south of Japan, the Big Island Hawaii, Afghanistan, and there's another, Northwest Africa, around the Northwest Sahara and Eastern Morocco.
Mm-hmm,
those are the five most powerful points in 19.5 around the Earth.
Mm.
And also the Giza Pyramids in Egypt. So there's 62 of these points, including the North and South Pole and so on. And there's those are giant vortexes, 500 miles across.
Wow, and the 19.5, as you mentioned, that reminds me of Hoagland's work, and I think he even took a tetrahedron and placed that inside the Earth, and the top portion of the pyramid and the bottom portion of the other pyramid actually ends up, I think, aligns at 19.5 if you place a tetrahedron inside a sphere. Do you know if that's... Have you heard about that?
Yeah, well, those are a lot of abstractions, and those people who have that geometry, they like to make abstractions about where you put this and where you put that and all those kind of things. And it's true, but at the same time, it's an abstraction. It's geometry is actually nature. Nature is the geometry.
Mm.
And metallurgy and organic chemistry have been derived from the snowflake crystals. The hexagonal geometry is a geometry of nature. Beehives and eyes and cells and packing and angles. When Bucky was doing this, he just kept designing and redesigning his domes for 50 years.
Mm.
But it was always the geometry of nature. It was always imitating nature and respecting nature and loving nature. And if you notice with geometry of industry, is that geometry, but they hide it. It's the drug geometry, the metallurgy, the chemicals, the oils, plastics. It's all using that geometry.
Hmm.
And how do we find it? Well, we find if you just find it in nature, you go out and see everything is fours, fives, and sixes.
Hmm.
And then the chaos is the odd numbers, 3, 7, 9s, and so on, is the cast. So the structure of nature is the 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, and the even numbers, and the chaos is the odd numbers, 3, 7, 9, 11, and so on.
Mm.
And that's how nature organized itself. Even astrology is based on those angles and those numbers.
Hmm. Wow, that's
But
that's
I like the patterns of nature more than I do numbers and abstractions.
Mm-hmm.
19.5. You might say, "Oh, it's a coincidence." No, it's nature organizing things.
That's right.
It's spirals.
That's
nature organizes everything in spirals. That is changing. It's moving. Water and air.
Mm.
Well, of course, fire too. But fire is a little too chaotic to look at it as geometry. But of the four elements, air, fire, earth, and water, the two elements, three elements of chaos, air, water, and fire are all spiral.
Mm.
And the geometry of ice and snow is hexagonal, and that's geodesic. And then the geometry of earth, which is solids, crystals, metals, and so on, is the hexagonal things. And then life is it's all of those. Actually, life is all the spiral helix of the DNA.
Mm.
And then the cells, which are organized with the hexagonal. So it's just nature organizing things, the consciousness and the universe and centering and magnetism and all that. I don't think in science anymore. I used to think in science, and then I changed my thinking starting in the 1970s.
You know, one thing that comes to mind when just backtracking and talking a little bit more about Buckminster Fuller, that he built these geodesic domes and houses. Do you think that it actually is more healthy to live in a house that have this kind of geometry, meaning that you don't, interfere with the natural energies of the earth even? And if you take a shape like a geodesic dome or something like that, it aligns itself more in a better way with the energies of the earth, so meaning that you actually are in a better position for not contracting disease and things like this. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is much more healthy being in a round structure. And if you notice, almost all of the traditional native structures in the history of the world were round, and then the teepee, and triangulated. And see, Western civilization is based on squares. And it's healthy. And cities are not healthy places. The power grids, the static, the pollution. Have you been in a dome or a yurt or a teepee before?
Actually, I don't think so, actually. Only kind of dome, I guess, I have been into some of those big cathedrals that had the dome, but then they had the squares around that, you know, but yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, Da Vinci was the kind of guy that got that going. I mean, I don't think he originated, but he was a great architect. And he used and some would say that Buckminster Fuller was the reincarnation of Leonardo da Vinci. They used the same geometry, and the drawings, their drawings actually look alike. And it is much more healthy being inside these round buildings, round structures. Mm-hmm. It's much more pleasant. In the 40s, when Fuller finally designed his geodesic dome as a shelter, and people didn't like him because they were used to squares. What's this round thing? It doesn't feel right. You know, it's inside this, and so you have to change your consciousness to really like circles better than squares.
Do you have any domes up or where you're at?
Well, not right now. I live in a treehouse, so I don't really have a dome. But I've had domes before. I built domes. I make dome toys. There's a dome business here in Oregon. Building kits. You know, they sell these dome kits that you can build yourself. A kit meaning it's easy to put it up. And sometimes big ones. They make different sizes. There's a dome company that a friend started. In the 70s, around 1980, started a dome company building geodesic domes, and I bought one of their domes. But anyway, Fuller designed the domes in the 40s, after World War II, to do the housing industry. And they knew the housing industry was coming. They had planned to do that after World War II. I mean, the industry is not... Industry thinks in a minimum of 5 to 10-year plans, more like 20 to 50-year plans. That's why the oil industry thinks in 50-year plans. That's why they want to go out and get oil. They want to have oil for 50 years. I mean, just 5 and 10 years is nothing to those people. So anyway, Fuller developed his dome and was going into building a factory to mass produce them. They couldn't get the whole system together because the builders and the architects, they have to change everything in the industry, in the entire building industry, to change to build this. They couldn't do it, so they gave up. They set up a factory, and it wouldn't work because the consciousness of the people to live in, to buy and live in. I mean, they were able to sell cars very big, you know, after World War II, very, very much. The cars just exploded, but to sell round homes, round structures, round buildings. It just was too much of a change of people's minds. People can only change a little bit in their mind because their mind is all in squares. People think in squares. They think in lines and monies and flat planes, and it's called plane and solid geometry.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you. It's being on. it's a square mindset. Definitely, that's right. You know, one thing that you. Also go into and talk about is I'm not sure if we talked about this at all last time you were here. Then of course we talked more about the aspects of global warming and the climate change and all this and why that is happening, connecting that later of course with permaculture and talked about that, but I don't think we talked anything about the space weather aspect, and this is another fascinating area that I guess you're researching and looking at. The things that are happening now on our planet, you know, with the warming and with the obvious changes that are taking place in the climate, do you connect this with stuff that actually is going on out there, more cosmic in nature?
Well, there's three main changes causes of the weather. The sun, and that's huge. I mean, that's bigger than we can imagine. We get all these neat pictures from SOHO and the satellite people and all that. So that's one of the great changes in the weather is the increased sun energy that's coming in for the last, 50 years. It's been, and it's, we had a little ice age in, it went to 1300 to 1850, and that was stressing Europe, and that was one of the reasons in Europe why the empire, they were going to go overseas, make big ships. The biggest technology in the last 500 years were ships before electricity came along, and then trains. But the biggest technology in that whole era, which was pre-industrial era, was the ships. And they could take a couple years, 5 years, to build a giant ship. And they took down the forests in Europe to build ships and cathedrals. So just to see the whole system of how the weather changes, and now it's heating up, where we had the ice age, in the little ice age there. And then we also have volcanoes that affect the weather. So the weather is very multiple causes and effects. And we in the city, square city people, don't think in causes and effects. We think in squares and lines and money and markets and machines. And we don't think in multiple causes and effects. And permaculture is based on multiple causes and effects. And you live in a bioregion, you've got all the elements, air, fire, earth, and water, the weather, the how you collect water. You're living in multiple cycles. Mm-hmm. And so we look at what is the causes of the weather. Well, the sun is the biggest one. But then we have the earth itself, like the terrain that you live in, the forests. The forests cause rain. They attract rain and they make rain. Well, if they clear the forest, which they're doing, and I don't know how your forests are in Sweden. We had some of the biggest, best forests here in the northwestern United States, and then they clear-cut them, and they're still doing that. Mm. Why? Because people are using a lot of wood to build with, and packaging, and paper. So you see, the whole system is, if you clear the forest, then it causes a drying out of your bioregion. Mm. And in permaculture, we want the forest. We really need them. They're wonderful. And the wilderness, the wildlife, the collecting water. Forests collect water in the ground and in their the growth, the green. So we need to do that. So we're thinking, well, look at weather. Maybe they have lasers in the satellites and they're steering hurricanes. I mean, this is some of the weather manipulation that we've been hearing about.
Yeah.
But Wilhelm Reich, who was a discoverer of cosmic energy and sex energy and healing and massage, and I mean he started a lot of things that were in the 40s and 30s and 40s and 50s that were very liberating. And this is saying, well, do you want to be free? Well, if you just want to be free to go shopping, it's different. But if you want to be free with nature, then it's more healthy. And I'm getting younger again. Every couple of years, I start getting younger again. I go on new diets and new changes. So if you want to be more self-reliant and simple and organic, then you get more natural and you go outside to get healthy. Because the cities are the opposite. Cities want to control environments. Environmental controls. I mean, that's kind of the law of the city.
Mm.
It's imported. We have to ship it in. And nature imports everything to us if we were just be receptive and sensitive to it. So we become more sensitive. That's why yoga and aerobics and massage and Chinese, qigong and acupuncture and herbology and all these things they're growing trends.
Mm.
And they're growing, now we hear that they're growing as fast as the medical industry. Well, that's kind of fast because the medical industry, I mean, we've got these giant hospitals, and why? Because people are sick. Well, what do you really need? Do you need to be healthy? No, I need money. Well, health is free if you know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, absolutely. And that's something I want to get into a little bit later and talk more about Natural detox and all this, how we can stay healthy, and even, you know, with the natural means and what is good for us and what is less good for us. I mean, going back again, I watched a documentary about the sugar wars that was occurring way back a couple of hundred years ago, and just it was quite enlightening to looking at this documentary, considering the fact that sugar in itself is such a bad thing for your health, but even the fact that all the industry around it and all the slavery connected with it, it's kind of almost like a reflection of just how how bad it is overall. I mean, it's just incredible. I'm not sure if you've studied that at all, but again, it's a reflection of all the that kind of the industry that we're setting up around these things that actually in the end are very bad for, you know, all humans in the end.
Well, sugar wars. Now, I haven't heard that term. Is this the first addicting industry in the world with sugar? In the modern era. And it started with the slavery in about 400 years ago when they started slavery. And yeah, there's a book called The Sugar Blues. And it's probably the most secret, open secret, that is, people are addicted to sugar and they know it. They got to get their fix every day. I think it was sugar and toilet paper and bread were the three things, and milk, that sold out in stores when there's a crash, when there's a shortages.
Mm-hmm.
If you go, the stores sell out, and those are the things people are addicted to: bread, meat, milk, sugar, and toilet paper. Those are the things. So, if as far as a sugar addiction, it's terrible,
yeah.
And it's in every country in the world that does baking, and now I'm city cultures. Even in India, where I was, they have pastry in the stores, junk pastry. I would call it junk, you know, just flour and sugar and water, a little bit of milk. So we have giant candy industries here, gigantic, and even gum and
of course.
So and sugar is part of alcohol.
That's right.
And it's added to almost every food, and so with flour. Now the soy, you know, the soy flour, and all these things are they're so processed that they're toxic for your body. They're toxic because they've lost their natural vitality, that's one thing, and second is they're high acids. So this is chemistry, which nature is also chemistry, but vibrations and radiation and magnetism. So if you want to be healthy, then you would notice how much acids you eat, which in chemistry is called pH. In other words, acid and alkaline is pH chemistry. It's a way of measuring chemistry and what the concentration is. So acid is one extreme and alkaline is the other. The most common acid on Earth is acid soil, and the soil needs to be a little bit of acid to grow food, and just slightly acid. And then the sea is the biggest alkaline thing on Earth, and that's the salty, that's alkaline. And so you need to balance it every day with every meal, actually. So as far as the industry and health, now, like, say, for example, hemp has been a big industry for the last, thousands of years, actually. But it was outlawed in the States in the 1930s.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, hemp is still actually grown. It started reborn in the 70s because of the hippies, and now it's being grown in Europe and in Canada, but not in the States. Because the chemical industry controls. But your thing about the slavery thing, the book Sugar Blues is still in print. And it's been in print now for about 30 years, and it explains what you were mentioning about the sugar wars, how the industry had started in, with the big ships coming over here. See, like when they started doing the African slavery thing, And they then that's when the sugar industry began. And it really was the one of the first early things that really corrupted and sickened the European people. And it would be curious to see if they were actually had sugar in Europe during the Black Plague.
Mm. Yeah,
that's the kind of thing that we'd look for, is the connections between the diet and health.
Mm, that's right, that's right. And speaking of hemp, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but I've heard at least that the plants are actually very good for actually cleaning the earth or cleaning the soil even, and that the hemp manage in some way to actually extract a lot of toxins from the earth. Have you heard about that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
well, a lot of plants are, and there are hundreds of plants that we use for restoring the fertility of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nitrogen-fixing plants that collect nitrogen from the air. And it's a big paradox that hydrogen and nitrogen, which are pretty much everywhere in space, at least around the planets. Now, in outer space, they're not so much. Hydrogen it actually is in outer space.
Mm-hmm.
But nitrogen around the Earth, we need that for our bodies. Nitrogen is a part of protein.
Yeah.
But a lot of plants collect it, and they're called nitrogen-fixing plants, and they collect it in their roots. But that's the only way we can actually gather. I mean, it's a real paradox. It's all around us, and yet we can't get into our cells, but we have to eat it.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Kind of absurd there. But the hemp has more uses. Hemp and bamboo have more uses than any other thing on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book which I've been studying bamboo since the 70s. Well, no, actually in the 80s I started studying bamboo. And there's 1,500 uses totally, not in one place, for bamboo. And there's probably 100 uses for hemp, you know, totally, of all the different ways people use it.
Yep, I mean...
Besides the food.
Mm.
And I mean, people in the West, we've lost touch with nature. During World War II, they actually started rebirthing farms for hemp in the States because... They needed fiber for rope. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And they also canvas. Canvas was started with the hemp a couple hundred years ago. I don't know exactly when it started, but a long time ago it started making canvas out of hemp fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp fiber is the best fiber in the world for making many, many things. And they say the U.S. Constitution was made on hemp, that Jefferson grew hemp, Washington grew hemp.
Yeah.
Hemp was the biggest industry in the States around the time when the colonies became free. And it was outlawed in the States in 1937, and then they restarted it in the 40s during World War II because they needed rope for fiber and they needed hemp for canvas. And a lot of the cloth at that time was hemp. We find that hemp is the best cloth. I mean, it's fantastic.
Mm.
And there's different kinds of it too. And even use it for building materials. And it's good for health if you use the leaves or that herb. It's just another herb, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's amazing. It's very, very strong, as you say. That's why they used it as rope in the beginning, and all the paper industry. I think some of the first use of paper over in Asia and especially in China, they used hemp for make the way back when the most delicate paper basically. So yeah, you're right. It's a big industry, and it's a shame that this isn't brought back. I know that Germany have been fighting a lot to get this, the industry going in that sense again. And I think overall, I guess it was outlawed in the beginning because of the THC in the plants, but there are so many different kinds of hemp also, meaning that just because you grow hemp, that doesn't mean that that you can use it for drug use. Isn't that right?
Well, actually, see, herbs are not drugs. Drugs are manufactured. Herbs are natural. Nature grows them. Hemp has been used had more uses for medicinally, health, building structures, rope, fiber, And farming, it's really good for producing mulch to feed the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Mulch is the anything that you put into the soil that's natural, that it's grown, you put into the soil. And we need to do that. When we do farming, we need to put the organic matter back into the soil. And in the West, what they've done is they've used chemicals so that they've actually ruined the soil with the chemicals. And you were talking about hemp restoring the fertility of the soil. There's other things as well that we do that. When I was in India, manure, for example, here's a really good thing about permaculture, using animal manure for feeding the soil. Now, we do that when the animals, they do it when animals graze out in the field, but also if the animals are pooping, then we collect the poop and we put it on the soil. And it's very, very fertile. It's extremely... Well, when they outlawed hemp, it was done for the paper industry. Actually, it was 10 industries that all conspired together to outlaw hemp,
mm-hmm.
including the medical and the chemicals and the plastics and all that.
Hmm.
So the whole synthetic industries have replaced hemp. That's why the hemp was the biggest thing they had to get rid of to be able to make all the synthetics and then sell them to us. So the whole Western civilization now is based on synthetics,
yeah.
imported, manufactured things. We have, 10 or 20,000 factories for this synthetic reality. It's a phony reality. It's based on something you have to buy. It's based on phony markets, stocks, and banks, and money, and all that. And we just need the local economy where we trade things. And this is... People say, well, this is a futuristic hippie pipe dream. I'm sorry, this is not doable. Well, with peak oil, you just study peak oil and you see how wasteful it is and how it's based on war. Take your choice.
Don't you think that they have new solutions for the energy crisis in store, meaning that they're gonna pump this thing with oil now for as long as they can? No pun intended there, but in that sense that they push up the prices now as heck, as much as they can, and they say that it's running out, very, very soon, so they keep that kind of fear mentality also right there. But I mean, if it were to actually go dry with all the oil, I would imagine that they have, endless of new solutions, new energy solutions out there to keep this kind of lifestyle that we have right now going. Or do you think that it actually will collapse? I mean...
Well, see, at this point, I don't really care if it collapses. And you were talking about the oil and stuff. The supply of oil is the blood of industry. Electricity is the nerves of industry. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually, electricity is also a power, it isn't just the nerves, like the control thing, but it's also the blood in a strange kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what they're doing, though, is they want to keep the price of oil down so that people will buy it. And the strange thing is that there's so many things made of oil. I mean, it's just unbelievable. There's thousands of things made of oil. And it isn't just the fuel for the cars. And your home heating and all that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Since the coal, there's so many people now, and since the coal is going down, well, actually still using a lot of coal, but that's why the oil, coal, oil, electricity, those are the, and then nuclear power. It's a fantastic synthetic reality. And they pride themselves on creating that stuff. It's like, yes, we are gods. We are creating these things. We build these factories. We can crank out anything. We're replacing nature. Well, it's an egomaniac. It's a technophile, a technology. People love technology. That's the religion of technology. It's the religion of science.
Mm-hmm.
We love the big monster solutions. Oh yes, science will always invent new things to fix any problem that we've created. Well, nature doesn't create problems. Oh yes, we'll get storms and floods and fires and droughts and all that. So if you just look at what are the effects, how do we ruin our biosphere and our ecology with all these things? And like paper, for example. Paper is a tremendous waste. I use too much paper here with all my writing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But hemp, you can make paper out of it. Now, we have hemp here. I mean, this is really absurd. We have hemp paper here that's imported from Canada, and hemp things are imported, hemp fiber and cloth, are imported from China. Mm-hmm. Now, it's cheap oil to get that here. Well, people say, no, the price of oil is too high. But it actually is low. If you see, we've been subsidizing on the oil industry here.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep the oil price down, I mean, mm-hmm. it's so absurd. Everything is artificial.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're really, if you love technology, you know, more, then you say, well, that's great. We're doing, you see, it's a culture clash. We're actually having culture wars, culture crash, because the value system, and that's why there's all these, well, people say, well, this is just a hippie plan. Well, no, it's nature. And we replaced nature. You see, the cities have replaced nature, most of the things, except for your gardens. So it's like your values. What do you really value in life?
Mm.
And if you trust the empire people, like the same people that brought you sugar from slaves, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. And the factories have wage slaves in them. And Fuller calls factories wage slaves, and technology are energy slaves.
Mm.
It's a control game. Do you want to use something that's really healthy? People don't feel how healthy or unhealthy things are. They just get sick and don't know why. Isn't that strange?
Mm.
People get sick and not know why.
Yeah.
It happened to me for 30 years.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. And I mean, what comes to mind is the fact that with this idea or even political philosophy almost of the New World Order, in a sense that everything is going to unite under one banner and everything is, you know, in that sense, even though we get the illusion of that there is, you know, diversity in that sense in the world, it feels like everything is kind of converging towards just one point, homogenize everything and all that. Do you think that there will be like spaces still left in that sense on the earth where people will be able to do this and the thing that they want and have that real freedom? Or I mean, it seems to me
real
like...
Real freedom. There you go. See, that's the question. What is real freedom? You know, it's the freedom to shop. It's the freedom to drive. It's the freedom to escape. It's the freedom to own and control and lock your doors because you're afraid of the lower classes. See, it's all these controls that in the empire, it's the religion of empire and technology gives you controls, but then it's based on fear. Fear of the cops, fear of the laws, fear of the crime, fear of the enemies, fear of invasion, fear of nature. I mean, it could go on.
Mm.
I did a study when I was doing a lot of therapy and healing work of how many fears people have. How many fears does the average person have? Could you guess?
500,000, probably. I don't know.
Well, now, his first guess was 100, second guess 1,000, 100,000. My survey, which I did, was I collected fears for a few years, and then I wrote up a list of them, about 150 fears, and then I'd give a quiz to people. Okay, check off all the fears you have.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are not aware of most of their fears. You're aware of only some of them. There's too many to be aware of all of them.
Well, then we
have
this
little quiz, and it came
sure.
out that people would take the quiz, and it was an average person had 100 fears.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, sure.
But
then,
now, if you counted all of them over a period of a year or two, it might be 200 or 300.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what I'm thinking about is all the subconscious stuff that we don't even know to that extent
right.
that we are afraid of, you know. But
we don't know we're afraid of it until it happens. Oh, there's a bug in my soup. Oh, there's a bug in my ear. There's a bug in my eye. Oh, there's a bug in my clothes. There's dirt here, dirt there, dirt everywhere. You know, it's like, it's in a way, the dirt thing, the bug thing, the germ thing, is like another fear that we're trained. Then we'll buy protection, and you hide indoors and lock the door. So now we have these security systems. I figure that there's, in the city, people, there's 50 locks per person. I mean, that may be wrong, but that's what it seems like.
Mm.
50 locks per person.
Mm.
Well, how much of your energy is taken up with security issues?
Yeah, very much.
Opening, locking, closing, privacy,
sure.
Germs, killing, cleanliness, all these things, and they're fear-based. I haven't studied this completely, but, you know, it's a study. I mean, how much fear do you have, and how free are you? Well, I'm free to go shopping. I'm free to lock the door. What kind of freedom do you want? Do you want to? Do you have to pay for your? Yes, I work so I can pay for my freedom. I can go shopping and I'm free to buy and consume and waste. It's a culture clash. It's value systems. What do you value?
Yeah, that's right. You know, Michael, I think it's a good place here to round things up here for the. For the first hour, do you feel like continuing with us and talking a little bit more about the detox? We got into that a little bit, but we can certainly continue talking about that if you have the time for us.
Oh yeah, we've hardly started the detox.
Great.
You want to go on with that now?
Sure, I just want to give you the last couple of minutes here to mention your website so people can know how to get there and so forth, and tell us also the book you mentioned, Econesia, how people can get a copy of that in case they're interested.
Oh yeah, well, my website, there's three different ways to get in. One is my new name is ecosma.net, E-C-O-Z-M-A, ecosma.net, and then there's two websites, and they're both big. One is Ecosma, that's the old one, and the new one is called Sunergy, S-U-N-E-R-G-Y. So all three of those can get you in there. And then the links are on your website to go in there also.
Definitely. Yep, definitely.
And
we're going to link that.
So those have articles that I've been writing for the last 15 years on there, most of them in the last 10 years. And there's a lot of subjects now, like the health issue. There's one site, and each site within there, there's about 35 sites, has a free book on it. And most of the books have about 20 chapters each, so they're an introduction. As far as the big books, the ones I'm finishing now, so Econesia, which is the Ecotopia, Empire into Ecotopia, is about changing our culture and changing our lives. And then the bigger one, which is also on change as nature, is Gaia Cycles, with Earth Energy Patterns, which includes permaculture. So both of them include permaculture in a way, and the consciousness of nature is embedded in there. In other words, how does Gaia, which is Earth, Mother Earth, how is Gaia changing the weather? And what are we doing to the weather that... Like, you know, the whole global warming thing is we're producing a lot of pollution. Well, I look at the pollution as a health issue,
mm-hmm.
more than the weather issue. I mean, it's definitely a weather, it's a cause of weather, the pollution and the green carbon gases and all that stuff. But the weather is caused by 100 different things.
Mm-hmm.
How does it affect our health? How does weather affect our health? How does pollution affect our health? And how can we reduce pollution so that we'll become more healthy and the weather will become more natural?
Don't miss our continuation with Michael in the subscriber section. We are going to talk about natural detox, good food, bad food, herbs, and much, much more. Thank you for tuning in. Red Ice Creations Radio will be back on Sunday with Alan Watt. Until next time, all the best and take good care.
Who are we? Where do we come from? And where are we going?
Welcome.
Welcome.
This is Red Eyes Radio.